I'm Chris Voss, sitting here with David Stern, who is the conductor of Puccini's Tosca that is going up with the Boston Lyric Opera October 13th through the 22nd over at the Cutler Majestic Theater here in Boston. David Stern, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Puccini's Tosca is such a big work that is a favorite. It's a good thing to put on in opera houses because people love it and people come, and it's great music. I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about how you first came to Puccini's Tosca.
Well, let's just talk about, first of all, Puccini, period. Puccini is the most maligned favorite composer in the world because everyone adores Puccini operas. He's always number one hit for opera house programs. And yet, as an important composer in music history, he's always denigrated. He's always put down as someone who wrote just beautiful melodies and lush orchestrations and, yeah, great operas, but so what? And it's such a shame because this composer is so important and integral to the development of music theater. Now, Puccini grew up in a very poor family and did not have enough money to have the education that he felt he should have to become a great composer. And this was always a problem for him. And he felt like the Germans had it over him in terms of culture, education, understanding, psychology. And so he almost downgraded his own understanding of music and interpretation. His writing is as subtle and as brilliant as anything that Strauss ever wrote. And even though he doesn't have this cult following that Wagner does, his music is as important. And Tosca is extreme Puccini. Now, what does that mean? It means that when we're talking about Puccini in terms of his own writing, we have to remember he really is part of the Verismo period. And too often he's put into a romantic context. And the romantic context allows us to say, oh, beautiful, lush melodies. It's not just beautiful, lush melodies.
Yeah, it's about realism in the story.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And in, you know, here we have a manic, authoritarian figure who uses a bullying tactic on the woman in a misogynistic way in order to get her to do what he wants and to press sexual favors from her. How modern is that? But today, in looking at Puccini, when people say, oh, how can Puccini be important and relevant to today's society? It is today's society. It's like saying, how can Shakespeare be relevant? Well, if we don't learn about Shakespeare, then we don't learn about ourselves. And I would say the same thing about Puccini and Tosca more than all.
As a singer and as an audience member with Puccini, one of the things that I've always loved is the music seems like conversation. And in that, it is extremely difficult, I found as a singer, to pull off. What is that difficulty for you as a conductor to put together a show that feels real and yet is staying to the script that is right in front of you?
Yeah, you have good questions. So Puccini's writing is so meticulous that if you do the fluctuations of tempo that are indicated in the score and you really try to follow them, now if you follow them, that doesn't mean you don't have any leeway. You are expected to have leeway as an interpreter, and every great composer knows that. But if you follow what he's indicating, then it sounds like everything is in tempo. That's what's amazing. Even though there are not three measures in the same tempo in the entire piece, you're constantly fluctuating. But if you do it in the way where it is honest to the text, then the audience doesn't perceive that there are changes. When someone comes up to me and says, oh my God, this piece, oh my God, it's amazing. He goes back and forth and the tempi change all the time. And if that person says that, then I've not done my job. When the person comes in and says, oh my God, everything sounds fluid, and meanwhile, everything, of course, is, you know, changing constantly, that's when we've done our job, because it's that fluidity that you're looking for. And it's all written in the score. It's so beautiful. And the problem is that there are wonderful singers who sing the heck out of Puccini these days. But as soon as a singer becomes sentimental with Puccini, as soon as that singer indulges too much in the moment and it becomes about that singer, then we lose the story. We lose the text. We lose the moment. And we come out of the story. And we say, okay, well, yes, we were into the realism, but now we're just going to listen to the beautiful singing and then we'll get back to the story. Then we've lost Puccini. Puccini never really gives in to lackadaisical or self-absorbed interpretation. You have to keep with the text. Stay on text.
The production at the Cutler Majestic is interesting in the way that it's being staged because, and for people listening, the Cutler Majestic has a very small pit, and Puccini's orchestra calls for a very big orchestra, which is sort of a problem. So
yes.
The BLO has come up with a solution. What is the solution?
Well, they call it integrating the orchestra into the action. So actually, we are posed on top of the set, 10 feet up, behind the singers, towards the back of the stage, which means that the singers will see me only on monitors, and I will be close to the scrim. There'll be a scrim between the orchestra and the rest of the stage. I should be able to hear them through the scrim, and also I will have a monitor reflecting their sound back to me. But they will be dependent on following me on a screen, and that makes everything a little bit dicey. So how do we overcome that? Well, I've been here now for 3 weeks rehearsing with Crystal Manich and the singers and doing the production. And meticulously, we are trying to cover every little corner where ambiguity would otherwise happen in a normal situation where if I'm in the pit, I can see that they're going to take time, or I can see physically when they're going to start singing at a moment where I have to follow. I won't be able to see them. So we have to work things out, which means that we need to have a relationship, a very tight relationship. And that's very luckily what's been happening. I've been enjoying this cast tremendously.
I imagine that that sort of a flipping the script, as it were, on a production can be very exciting for an artist to do something a little bit different like this.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I've done operas where I've been behind and diagonally on the side of the stage behind the singers, but on the same level. This is the first time while I will be 10 feet above and not necessarily being able to see that there are human beings on the stage at the right time. I mean, should someone somehow, you know, trip, it happens, or just miss their cue to come in, I may not know that. So I have to make sure that I have some kind of visual upon, yeah. Well, there are moments that it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. But it does mean that you make a list of the priorities. What tempo are you going to take here? What is the relationship? How are we going to get from this section to the next? And it's actually forced me to ask questions of myself, of the way I've done it last time, and how I can make sure that this is smoother. And so I've enjoyed that process very much.
I want to gear shift a little bit about you as a conductor, because you do a lot of work that people in Boston will know a fair amount about, and that is early music ensembles, or at least period instrument ensembles, coming up, doing work with Concerto Cologne, with John Elliott Gardner, and then your opera Fuoco. You guys do period instrument.
Only period instrument.
What is different about approaching an opera that uses those gut-stringed, lower-tuned orchestral instruments?
Not necessarily lower-tuned. I mean, in Monteverdi we do in 440.
Oh, do you?
And, you know, they're... Yeah. The A was all over the place in those days. So we do have kind of artificial levels, the norms that we use today, but we do have to accept that they're pretty artificial.
But it's still, the approach must be very different than a big orchestra like the Puccini Orchestra.
Completely different. And yet, because I've worked so long with period instruments in opera repertoire, what advantage these instrumentalists have is that with these old bows, especially the bows, the gut strings, the whole different setup, the winds, natural winds and brass, they are much more attuned to rhetoric.
What do you mean by that?
Well, in the 18th century, every musician had to study rhetoric as well. In other words, certain phrases of speech, how to carry certain gestures. The whole idea that music is not just notes, but an actual gesture was formalized in the 18th century, 17th century and 18th century. And the idea that if you're playing a gavotte, for example, where the rhythm would be dum dum bum, ya ta 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 tum, that upbeat is not just 2/8 notes. It's It's a gesture, bum, bum, bum. And if you, as soon as you talk about a gavotte gesture, then the musician knew how to play the gavotte. It wasn't, oh, this is an eighth note and this is... And we don't talk often in rehearsal, we don't talk about eighth notes and quarter notes. We don't talk about 14 piano. I'll say something like, this is galant, or this is more rococo, or this is buffo. And they'll change their playing simply because of the genre or the gesture. And that way of playing supports accompanying a voice in a different way. What I've learned over the years is that using very similar vocabulary, I can often ask a modern orchestra to do that. And once we have a good enough relationship, it works. You have to court that relationship. You have to court that way of expressing something. So it's not just a question of louder, softer, faster, slower. There is much more than that. And that nuance is something that I enjoy very much with Opera Foco that I work with in Paris. And every time we work with our singers, the orchestra insists on knowing what the text is. And they'll say, if there's a word that somebody doesn't understand, they'll say, okay, well, what is that word? Because I have to know how to play for that word. And that's a question that is beautiful. I love that question. And that whole relationship between the orchestra and the stage then becomes very, very vibrant. And I try to bring that out when I do modern repertoire as well, because I think if you're doing Tosca or if you're doing Wozzeck, you have to have that same attitude, that same approach. And then what's going on in the pit is all the more intensive.
I wonder if you can point to a moment in the Tosca score where you really try to use that sort of approach with here with the Boston Lyric.
At the very beginning of the third act, the shepherd, actually in our case a shepherdess, because it's a young soprano who's singing, she sings a berceuse. A berceuse is a lullaby, and the lullaby has a certain gesture to it. And it's a berceuse. You have to sing it as if you have a child in your arms and you're cradling the child. There's no, whether it's 18th century, 19th century, 20th or 21st century, a berceuse is a berceuse. And you have to find, of course, it changes depending on the period, how that rocking feeling comes through. But in Tosca, when you have this kind of genre, you have to realize what you're doing with it. And it's beautiful to look at it that way. Vici d'arte is not an aria in this sense. Vici d'arte is a prayer. And it goes from a prayer to recitative. And that fine relationship between the spoken and the sung is what makes that moment so human and fragile. Because that's what's amazing about Tosca. She's always showing her actress's side. She's coming in and having a huge fit in the first act, and she's demanding that the painting the tenor is working on have black eyes, and because God forbid, you know, it should be anyone else's eyes but hers. So she has all these whimsical sides. And then in Vici d'arte, finally, she just shows herself. And when you just show yourself, then it's not about the voice. It's about everything that Tosca's gone through. And for me, to get to that point, it's how the soprano manages to juggle between that spoken moment, which sings about sorrows that you cannot explain in words, and then these words, which illuminate a fragile side and a fear that she doesn't know how to reckon with. And that's what makes that aria special to me.
David Stern, thank you so much for taking a moment to come by WCRB and to chat with me about Tosca. Tosca runs October 13th through the 22nd over at Emerson's Cutler Majestic Theater. Very much looking forward to it. And thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.